I'm a psychologist and I live here in Gippsland. And I work as a coach of doctors these days, so I've been doing that for a number of years. Before that, I had a private practice clinic here in Sale and worked with whoever came through the door, referrals from doctors. So I do have a long history with the community of Gippsland as their counsellor. These days, I'm working as a coach of doctors, having worked as an executive coach in the corporate space for some time. I'm also a meditation teacher, so I bring a lot of mindfulness into all of the work I do. That's really a base or foundation set of skills, whether I'm counselling or coaching. That's always a part of it.
Just paint a picture of what life's like working in the medical system at the moment.
So we already had a lot of difficulties before we had COVID, so it really has amplified what's happening for doctors. So I guess it depends if you're looking at a junior young doctor or if you're looking at a mid-career, more experienced kind of doctor, but they're all experiencing a level of anxiety that they haven't experienced before. So doctors are very hardened up to what they see. You know, they're dealing with a lot of trauma and grief and sadness all day in their work. They come through a medical culture that's highly competitive, that's really striving for perfectionism. Stoicism is very highly valued. So they're very well trained to be able to cope with a lot of difficulty. And in fact, the health system has responded in recent years by asking doctors to do resilience training. And it's a bit of an insult for doctors because they do feel like they're already incredibly resilient. And I would support that they are. But having said that, the environment doesn't really teach them the skills they need for good mental regulation and good emotional regulation. So a lot of the time, doctors are doing two things. One's depersonalization, so trying to really remove themselves or keep themselves separate or detached at some level from the patient. And they're really taught to do that even if they don't want to. And the other thing is to compartmentalise, so to try and put these difficult experiences away in their mind in some separate kind of place that they might ignore or numb or not give too much attention to. And if you think of a busy doctor in, say, an emergency department on the floor, every 10 or 15 minutes they're meeting a new stressed out person. And we get cross, I think, sometimes as patients that we don't get enough kind of tenderness or bedside manner or emotional support from our doctors. And the truth is that about 50% of them are burnt out. They have very high rates of depression, anxiety, more suicide ideation than the general public. So the fact that they're even showing up is a huge achievement a lot of the time. So to now be operating in this environment where some of the public are questioning their medical expertise around vaccines and safety in those sorts of ways is another layer of challenge for them. This experience of the patient who has done their own due diligence on Google and then wants to challenge the doctor's expertise. The doctor might have spent anywhere from 10 years to 50 years understanding the science and understanding the anatomy and how our bodies respond. And so this kind of all day long questioning and challenging and answering questions about COVID and vaccine, it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back for a lot of our doctors. They're already under pressure. We had significant workforce issues before COVID, and now we have this added layer of sort of justifying and explaining their expertise regularly through the day. And of course, at the beginning of COVID, it's not so much now, but we had a lot of anxiety for doctors around bringing COVID home to their own families and how they were going to manage doing their work and giving the best that they can to their patients and their organisations, and then worrying about whether they could go home. So a lot of doctors very isolated as a result of some of those circumstances.
Well, that's a tricky one because I guess as a patient, you want a relationship, you want a conversation about your health, you want to know about things like prevention, and often it's very difficult to get an appointment. So a lot of us are jumping on Google to find out if we're a hypochondriac or not and get a basic reassurance. I guess what would be considered the esoteric side of wellness, the spiritual or the mental health side of wellness, you're always kind of booed down by the professional. They just totally dismiss those conversations. Is that the medical system not catching up with what people want to know?
Sometimes what young students learn in medical school is described as the fire hose of information. You know, they are experts in anatomy, in pharmacology. If they've a specialty, they're an expert in their specialty. And there's very little room, in fact, I think, as a junior young doctor to really take in things about communication or how to manage their own emotions, what motivates people. There's really not a lot of room, and medical education in the last decades, I think it is changing, hasn't given any emphasis to teaching those things. So doctors have learned about human bodies. If you're in psychiatry, you might learn a bit more about the mind. And then the community expects them to offer things that they really haven't been trained in. And medicine hasn't perhaps done as good a job as it could have in that conversation with the community. So I agree with you. Yes, as patients, we do expect some more human connection from our doctors. We do go to Google to look for information. We need, though, as patients and members of the community, to be a bit more judicious, perhaps, with what we look at Google, and to really be looking for the sites that have a lot of credibility. And it's perhaps a useful conversation to have with your doctor, and for us to be having more broadly as a community about which sites are the good sites. You know, looking at PubMed and looking at some of those sites that have a bit more credibility about them, rather than just the chit-chat that might be on Twitter about what we might have wrong with us. Because it's actually frightening and creates a lot of anxiety in us a lot of the time that we don't need to have. And if we would go to the doctor and have a conversation with the doctor, we might actually rule out a lot of those perceived or imagined anxieties. So it's a fine line. We need all of these pieces of information. The doctors actually are only providing about 11% of healthcare. They're at the very pointy end of healthcare. All these complementary therapists, 80% of Australians use complementary therapies because we feel more heard, because we get to express ourselves a bit more, because we have an appetite for things that don't have to be proven at the same rigorous level in science that doctors might need. So it's certainly not about ruling those things out. I think with artificial intelligence and the way things are changing, the workforce shortage in doctor and nursing, particularly in rural regions, physiotherapists, we are going to look to other kinds of remedial and support services. And we're going to see much more life coaches, nurse practitioners, people who can do acupuncture, all sorts of things are going to be part of our ongoing health landscape. But we do need to remember as community members, when we go to see our doctor, that they're probably quite stressed. The idea that they've got a 6-week waiting list and every second patient that comes into their room tells them how long they've waited for them is not their idea of best medicine. It's not their best plan. It's not how they want to practice. They are being constrained also by the system and the structures that aren't serving us well.